everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is a glorious Monday morning here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. We are happy to have Nick right back.
Oh, look at that.
You guys passing notes?
Bart Scott. Where's Bart Scott where you need him? Green Bay wins the division.
That's right.
Write that down, see?
11-23. Let's get this thing going.
Yeah.
You got like 14 other cards of people that come on set and make predictions that are wrong. Tons of news to get to today. The college football playoffs are set. Speaking of, Packers are moving on from Mike McCarthy, but we are going to start with a wild one on Sunday Night Football. Steelers hosting the Chargers. Steelers in the driver's seat most of the game, up 16 in the first half, but the Chargers come all the way back. Take this to the fourth. Take their first lead with just over 8 minutes to go, and Justin Jackson found the end zone. Pittsburgh responds. Ben Roethlisberger to Jalen Samuels. That's in for a touchdown. Chargers now with a shot to win the game. Mike Bagley lines up and misses the field goal attempt. Turns out the Steelers were offsides. Offsides. Second attempt, this one blocked. But guess what? Steelers offsides again. Stop it. Third time's a charm. This time through the uprights, nails it. Chargers win 33-30. Whoo! Here is Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers on a wild win.
We hadn't had a win like this in a long time. I mean, that we've been down like that and fought back and won. And I know it's never happened here. I just saw that 176-0-1 or 174-0-1 with a 16-point lead at home in the history of the Steelers. So pretty heck of an accomplishment today.
I hate losing at home. You know, I hate it for our fans. I hate, you know, losing it for my linemen and the rest of these guys. But we'll come in tomorrow. We'll look at it and we'll move on.
Well, Philip Rivers said it. The Steelers were 174-0-1 with a 16-point lead, and that is now out the window. All right, CeCe, let's start with you. What did the Chargers prove in this comeback win last night over the Steelers?
Well, a lot of the people in the country have not watched the Chargers. They don't understand what quality of team they've had, even with the significant injuries that they've had. Up and down their roster, lost their tight end, lost some linebackers, lost some other quality players, lost Joey Bosa for a great period of time. He's back to full strength now, manning that left defensive end. But this is a really, really talented football team. And I think from a coaching standpoint, we don't know a lot about the coach, but you can see through watching tape of them that he operates, that they're well prepared, and they have one of the best quarterbacks in the league. We don't talk about, of all the elite quarterbacks, we talk about him the least. So, Bill, take this young team and to be able to get a win like this in Pittsburgh, do you know what that means as far as the confidence they'll have? Because they've already faced the best of the best. Kansas City, L.A. Rams, they faced these teams and lost very, very close games. So I think that when you get late in the season and you stop losing those games and you start winning them for a young team, especially without their second-best offensive player, Melvin Gordon, who had a tremendous season. Yes, tremendous confidence for that coaching staff and for this team as they travel back. And now, man, they're playing for keeps. Potentially, it's in line for them to potentially get a bye. So a lot of teams stumbling towards the end. There's going to be teams like the Chargers who they're going to catch fire, and we're going to start to have to give them notice. The Chargers, the Texans, teams like that we didn't have in the discussion. We're going to have to put them in the discussion of, are they Super Bowl contenders?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that early in the year, the Chargers played two teams in the Chiefs and the Rams. We didn't know how good those teams were going to be. The Chargers lose those games.
Good games.
Good games. They lose closely, tightly contested games. We think, okay, another similar, same old Chargers year. Joey Bosa has some mysterious injury. It's a bone bruise. He's out indefinitely. They lose a couple games early. Looks like they're going to do what they've done the better part of the last decade. Somewhere between 7-9, 9-7, to where they just miss out on the playoffs. And since those two losses in the first few weeks, they've lost one game all year. They are in position where 10 days from now on Thursday Night Football, they could be playing the Chiefs for a chance to become the one seed in the AFC. Like, one of these teams, the Chiefs and Chargers, are going to end up 12-4, 13-3, and as the five seed. Yep. Like, that's the NFL playoff format, and Phillip Rivers is the biggest reason they've been able to do this. He's the only player in the league that's had multiple touchdown passes in every game. Mahomes hadn't done that. Breeze hasn't done that. The last guy to do that through the first 12 games of a season was Aaron Rodgers all the way back in 2011. And this is one thing we've talked about on the show. At the trade deadline, all these teams making moves, we said no team is going to get a bigger addition than the one the Los Angeles Chargers are going to get when Joey Bosa comes back. And you saw his impact yesterday. You saw a guy who was in the running, or at least preseason contention for Defensive Player of the Year, a guy who last year, in year two, his first full year of football, or last year, his first full year of football in the NFL, was a dominant player. And so this is a really good team that I'm glad you brought up the coach, because Anthony Lynn's one of the more anonymous coaches in football. Mm-hmm. And you see how prepared he has his team down 23-7 to Pittsburgh. And you don't lose hope. You
didn't flinch.
Didn't flinch at all. You force in the
Stuck
second
with
half.
Your game plan,
and,
all of it.
And in the second half, your defense. First three drives for Pittsburgh in the second half. 15 total plays for 35 total yards.
Yes.
So the offense made plays. Special teams
yes.
made
and
plays.
And that's his side of the ball. That's right. where he's cut his teeth. That's what he's known for. Jenny, you bring up a great point, because we see this. Teams get down in the NFL. Man, if you're down more than two scores in the NFL, man, you got real, real big problems. Saturdays, college, see teams come back all the time. But did not panic. Had confidence in the game plan that we did have, even though it didn't play out in the first half. Like, we're going to stick with it. And you cannot watch the L.A. Chargers play and not watch Derwin James and say, man, that's a special football player.
Yeah.
Like, I have not seen a safety play like him. And I'm going to pause for a minute, because I know last week that we celebrated the death of
Sean Taylor.
Sean Taylor. I haven't seen a player play like Sean Taylor until I seen Derwin James play. Skill set, can play in the box, can play the middle of the field. Great ball skills, great tackler. Like, he should be at the top of the list of rookies of the year. We got some rookies playing some great football, but Derwin James kept them in that football. He dominated the second quarter.
Oh, my God.
Kept that team in the game.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, which all the Chargers players echoed in the pregame interviews, which was, hey, we know the knock on us is that we can't finish out a season, right? We didn't close out a season. We play really well, very quietly, and then we sort of drift off. And for the first time, they all feel like they're on the same page, and they're doing just that. Let's turn to the other side with the Steelers. How concerned are you now, CC, that they've now lost their second in a row?
Well, the reason why I have a great deal of concern is based on what are the goals of the organization? Because sometimes in television, when you start analyzing things, sometimes you lose perspective of what an organization, what their goal is, what did they set out to do, and or an individual. So if someone, I always do this with LeBron. Well, what were LeBron's goals, Nick? And forget about how I feel. And based on the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, when they meet every year, they're one of a handful of teams. The first day, the goal is win the division and win the Super Bowl. They're one of a handful that can only do that every year. So, no, this is not a Super Bowl team. And I saw colossal failure on all sides. The coaching was bad. At the end, the game's tied up. You don't allow your team to jump offside three times. It's like a professional golfer. I'm going to allow him to hit three wedges. Oh, he hit the first one. He hit that one in the water. Oh, go ahead and try it again. You cannot give a field goal kicker extra time to prepare to be able to kick. I'm going to let him. No, you can't let him kick it again.
Especially a Chargers kicker.
You cannot jump offside no matter who you're playing to give them an extra attempt at it. People say, well, the game's tied. You don't have anything to lose. Yes, you do. Because he could miss it, especially the Chargers kicker. So I didn't like that. You can see on the football field they struggled not running the football. And defensively, they with a two-touchdown lead, two-point conversions, you can't protect that. Special teams gave up a big touchdown. So for me, at all levels, the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they're going to regret this game. You can't lose two late in November and expect to be a Super Bowl contender.
I'm just very excited for Tuesday around 11:05 a.m. Central Time to hear Big Ben tell me who that critical interception in the red zone, whose fault that one was. was. Because I thought he got hit. That ball fluttered so badly. And then I saw it again. Oh, no, he didn't get hit. I'm curious whose fault it was that with a two-score lead after halftime, your first three drives, you punt on all three, and yet run 15 plays for 35 total yards. I'm excited to find those things out because this is a Steelers team, Jenna. You said it off the top, a 16-point lead at home. Just make it a 14-point lead. They said this one during the broadcast. See, you mentioned it this morning. Going into last night, you get a 14-point lead at any point in the game if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. 220-0-2.
Wow.
They'd done it 222 times. They'd never lost. And now they've lost. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, forget a bye. Like, you've got that big game against New England that I've had circled all year long that could determine the two or the three. No, no, no. Now New England can lose that game and still be okay. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, they're only a half game up on the fight in Lamar Jackson's right now. Like, Baltimore, who was left for dead, 7-5, Pittsburgh, 7-4-1. This is a terrible loss. I understand Pittsburgh's going to be upset. They got one of their touchdowns on a false start. The NFL officials this year have been
They still had a two-touchdown lead after that.
Absolutely right. Okay. And they could have had a larger lead if when you're driving still with the lead in the first half, you don't throw a terrible red zone pick. Like, this is a devastating loss for Pittsburgh. I still think they'll win their division. But winning your division without a bye, all that means is you're going on the road to either Kansas City, New England, or Houston in round two. Like, it is a terrible loss. And it's the third straight game they played poorly. They played terrible against the Jags, and they got away with it. They played poorly last week against Denver, and they lost. And they played poorly this week at home.
And compounding that, they did lose James Conner with a leg contusion. We'll have to wait and see how bad that is. All right, let's take a break. Coming up on the other side, big news out of Green Bay. We'll talk about Mike McCarthy. And now what's next for Aaron Rodgers? Next on First Things First.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer, StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out, like the hottest new streetwear from brands like Gucci, Supreme, and Bape. StockX allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Rolex, Omega, and many more. StockX is the go-to place for anyone looking for new streetwear without the hassle of waiting in long lines for the new Jordans or the new Yeezys. StockX provides tons of historical price data for your buying and selling needs, allowing you to know the average price that an item sells at and how many times an item has been resold. And StockX uses the same principles as the stock market to make buying and selling as safe and easy as possible. Last but not least, StockX provides up-to-date news on the latest drop dates for the newest streetwear. So go to StockX.com/FTF. That is StockX.com/FTF. StockX. Now you know.
We'll get to Mike McCarthy and the Packers in a second, but first, Giants, Bears, what a game. Odell, multitasking yesterday, throws the 49-yard touchdown strike to a wide-open Russell Shepard.
See, I got an idea here.
Go ahead.
Because the Giants are winning now, they might not be able to draft a quarterback. Correct. Draft a wide receiver. Let Odell try quarterback.
Oh, yeah. You saw on that onside kick how much courage he got. Put him in the pocket. Watch how much double.
They got special rules for the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
They can't
trust
hit
me.
Him no more.
He was
no,
trying to bat
me.
It away.
He's not trying to get hit. Okay.
All right, same game. Allen Robinson traps the ball on B.W. Webb's head before completing the catch.
This was an entertaining football game. And given the fact that the Saints lost on Thursday, a really damaging loss for the Bears and their hopes of sneaking into one of those bye spots in the NFC. Thought they were going to steal it at the end.
Thought they were going to steal it. But we know those backup quarterbacks, Nick, huh? Eventually they look like backups right from the beginning. Pick 6 the other one.
Man, my
great
guy,
catch.
My guy Chase Daniel looked a lot better when he wasn't playing.
Texans wideout DeAndre Hopkins showing why he's one of the best in the NFL. Great over-the-shoulder grab against the Browns.
Oh, a little helmet pops off. Let the treads fly. Nuke. This is an entertaining game, too. You're going to be talking to Baker next week, see, right?
Yeah, I'm covering that one. Carolina at Cleveland. Nuke is one of the most underrated wide receivers. Yeah, I'm going to be talking to Baker.
He's got to bounce back.
Finally, Keenan Allen, right place, right time, wild touchdown. Rivers pass deflected off two Steelers before Allen caught it.
Man, one of those Steelers could have been flagged for leading with his helmet on his teammate.
Don't I tell you, Nick, those defensive players are not real, real smart. Yeah. You know the cornerback's in man. He's going to undercut the guy. The safety, he should be going for the upfield shoulder. He shouldn't even be coming on that angle. So that's what I told you, Pittsburgh. Man, bad coaching, bad defensive plays, Ben, bad interception, bad special teams.
And yet they still could have won it at the very end and didn't. All right, after what most likely will be the second straight season missing the playoffs, and after a season of friction with Aaron Rodgers, the Packers fired head coach Mike McCarthy. Happened after last night's brutal loss at home to the lowly 3-win Arizona Cardinals. Offensive coordinator Joe Philbin named interim head coach for the 4-7-1 Green Bay Packer team. Mike McCarthy had been the Packers head coach since 2006, winning a Super Bowl in 2010. See, we'll start with you. What was your reaction to this move by the Packers?
Not surprised at all. We had heard a whole bunch about it, and just knowing people in Green Bay that Aaron Rodgers might be the most talented quarterback, and he's definitely the most talented probably throwing the football. We've seen a long, long time playing this game, but he's also one of the most complicated and probably one of the most hard to deal with on a daily basis, and you can see. And a lot of times, you know, when you're trying to analyze a football player, you like to be able to know, like, where they came from, what's their makeup, so how they got to this point. So typically in crisis situation, you find out what they are. Aaron, I'm concerned about him. I'm concerned at this point in his career, with so many good quarterbacks playing and the pressure to win, with him being the highest paid, that Aaron's not real good at relationships. When he came into the NFL, we didn't know anything about the relationship that he has with his family. It's become more and more public that he doesn't have a relationship with anyone close in his family. We knew the relationship. He didn't have a relationship with Brett Favre. And then now we're hearing the last couple years he's got a problem with Mike McCarthy and that relationship. It's really, really hard in the NFL if you don't know how to manage your relationships. And what I'm afraid of right now, Aaron Rodgers is getting ready to go through more scrutiny than any other time in his career. Yep. Because now this is going to be like a basketball player, demanding for the coach to be gone. And Mark Murphy, their president, he's going to ask Aaron on this next hire, who do they think they should be looking at? Aaron's going to be involved in it. And that, to me, is something a player should never be involved in. And I believe Aaron is going to come back to haunt him because he's going to be tied to this coach and the Packers' success because he's complained about who they hired and fired as a quarterback coach, who they were, their personnel, Jordy Nelson, and the rest of these young wide receivers. So now Aaron Rodgers is getting ready to get more pressure than any point in his career, even than when he took over for Brett Favre. Even more pressure there, and we're getting ready to see what Aaron is made of coming down the stretch of his career as the highest paid player, which is also something, Jenna, he demanded. Him and his agent demanded he was the highest paid. He's got all those things. Now he's got the coach fired. Okay, so Aaron, it's your franchise. All the pressure is on you.
All right, and to use, you use the basketball analogy, but here's one of the reasons why in basketball, and we've talked about this, that it's not as risky of a situation. In basketball, there's only five guys on your team on the court, and you play both ways. So if you really are good enough, if you're the Aaron Rodgers of the NBA, if you are the most talented we've seen in a generation, you can, by on your own, make your team a playoff team, make your team a championship contender. Aaron Rodgers could get all the things he wanted, come back next year, and have an MVP caliber season, but he only on the field half the time. Like, you can't, even as a quarterback, you can't put your imprint on the game the way an NBA superstar can. Now, I have no problem whatsoever with Aaron Rodgers demanding the highest paid guy. He's the best player in the league. It's the position that gets paid the most. And as we've said before, he also was next in line. That he will only be the highest paid guy for a year or so.
But also, you immediately
hamstring your team.
You immediately. So don't say, hey, I deserve this. Hey, listen, let me tell you what you deserve. All right. If you want to put a championship team on the field, if you want to help the organization, if you want to have something to do, if you want to have a say, economically is the most powerful say. All right. Tom Brady, people talk about what he's done on the field. Tom Brady, the most significant thing he's done the last 5 to 7 years was he took a pay cut. so that they would have the flexibility to get whatever players they want, whatever coaches they wanted. But Tom Brady making that move right there, it's significant in how they move forward and the type of teams they could put on the field when he got older.
I also think Brady, forget the advantage he has with his wife's income, I also think he has an advantage over any other quarterback, Rodgers included, that if he does take less money, he can believe his team is going to spend that money the right way. Like, a lot of other guys say, okay, I take a pay cut and then you blow the money. Like, the Jags go spend the money you save on me on Dante Moncrief at $9 million. But here's the – I don't buy into that Aaron Rodgers got Mike McCarthy fired. I think he wanted him fired. I think he could have helped save him, and he did not. And I think the lack of the bad relationship was a contributing factor. But I think Mike McCarthy underachieving as Packers head coach is why he got fired. And I was listening to all the broadcasts yesterday, and there is a special dispensation we give to a championship coach. We do not give it to a championship player. I heard people I really respect talking time and again yesterday about how, oh, you don't do this to Mike McCarthy. Man, players get cut midseason all the time.
That's coaches in television. They're just trying to protect the coaches. There ain't no coach in his right mind talking about, oh, it's disrespectful if I fire you during the season. Let me tell you something. If you're going to fire me at the end of the season, you can give me my walking papers now. No need for me to come back through this door not one single day with this fake smile on my face. So all those people on TV, trust me, they trying to protect the fraternity. Do they really, really believe that? I doubt
it. And because McCarthy even said himself after the game, I don't know what I'm going to say to them tomorrow. Well, now you don't have to worry about that. And now he gets a jump start on whatever his next job is going to be.
Right.
The Packers get a jump start on whomever they're going to want to hire. But I agree with C. Rodgers, any Packers failures prior to this year, they had been couched, and I think rightfully, as despite Aaron Rodgers. Any Packers failures moving forward
is
going to be said because of Aaron Rodgers.
Quickly, CeCe was not surprised. Were you surprised they did it midseason? Was that on the table?
You lose to the Cardinals at home. You lose all of a sudden four or five after
snow,
the bye.
Wind at home? Josh Rosen?
Yeah. I mean, that was going into yesterday, I didn't think there was a chance Mike McCarthy would be fired yesterday. But I also didn't think there was a chance Packers were going to lose that game.
Mike McCarthy was going to get fired, and all the people who called me yesterday, and I told them, put stacks and stacks on Green Bay. The cold weather, hey, man, the Cardinals going to get on the bus, go on the stadium, they're going to pack the stuff up,
right,
go back to the airport. So all the people who called me as their inside guy, they fired me. McCarthy need to get some, too.
Yeah. On that note, I have no money left.
Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. We'll get to Nick's finances in just a second.
They're disastrous.
All the headlines.
Chapter 11.
All the headlines from this game were Mike McCarthy getting fired, but his quarterback Aaron Rodgers didn't help him a ton. Threw for just 233 yards, one touchdown. All right, C, put a grade on Aaron Rodgers' day yesterday.
I can't do better than a C. Knowing the talent, knowing what he was up against, I can't give him better than a C. Aaron Rodgers, the expectations should be higher. But you could see in the game, he was pressing. He deserves a C.
I give him an F. I give him an F. I give C's gambling advice an F. I give my marriage right now an F. Once the big gal gets looked at, I give everything about yesterday and the Packers game an F. I didn't even need to cover the 13. Just win outright. Just include it.
Just win the game?
Just win outright. You can't beat Josh. Where's Josh Rosen from, C?
Southern California.
Some type of beach, man.
Some beach. How's he going to do in the frozen tundra of Lambeau?
Oh, he didn't do good, but they beat him. He didn't do good.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to give me at least a D. I'm above your marriage because I'm permanent.
Hey. True. Honey,
yeah,
I love
absolutely.
You.
Gotta take a break.
You're the one that gave your marriage an F.
No, I gave.
Doofus.
No, I didn't.
Coming up, could Dwayne Haskins swoop in, steal the Heisman from Tua and Kyler Murray next on First Things First?
Yeah, you.
Welcome back to the best in the Big Ten. Hit the hardwood tonight on FS1 as 14th-ranked Iowa taking on number 9 Michigan State. Big Ten college hoops tips off at 6 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
It's a good game. Two teams that play real defense, not the type some other Big Ten team in Wisconsin plays. I'm excited to watch Tom Izzo's team.
Lupe.
Really good team.
I'll be rooting for her. Mm-hmm. Time for us to go viral. Jalen Ramsey, we learned, both spicy in interviews and in efforts to help other players. Here he is yesterday, faking out, helping Andrew Luck.
Hey, Jalen made a spectacular play to end the game yesterday. The tackle keeping him inbounds in order to let the clock run out so the Colts can get one last shot at it.
What was it?
That was a
Bad loss.
I mean, that was a vintage Jags win. So the old 6-0 behind the strength of Cody Kessler. Didn't see that one coming yesterday either, see?
Oh, Jalen, little snotty-nosed little kid. Of course, put his hand out to help up one of the quarterbacks. Ah, no, psych.
Missed me with that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Jalen.
All right, time for stories to start your morning.
I see how you see through rose-colored glasses. It was nice. Oh, last
sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Deshaun Watson led the Texans to a big win over Baker Mayfield and the Browns. For Houston, it was their 9th win in a row. Nick, are we talking about the Texans as legitimate contenders now in the AFC?
Last week I said that of all the teams that make the playoffs in the AFC, the Texans are the ones that I feel least confident in. I feel the same way this morning, but I give them – they played a great game yesterday, and they made – Baker had been – a month of football, Baker had thrown 2 picks. Yesterday he threw 3. They played an excellent game and made Baker look the worst he's looked in 6 weeks.
Yeah, Jenna, I believe the Texans, they are legitimate contenders. They're also one of the teams that's trending to get better. So why would we put a ceiling on them? There's still 4 more weeks of football. If they keep doing this the right way, we have to be able to give them some type of respect. Romeo Crennel did a great job as defensive coordinator against a young quarterback, forcing those turnovers.
All right, guys, let's move on to the SEC championship game. And what a story for Jalen Hurts. 11 months after being pulled in the national title game against the same team in the same building, Hurts replaces an injured Tua Tagovailoa to lead a comeback win over Georgia and win the SEC championship. All this after he decided to stay at Alabama after losing his starting job. All right, CC, you were out there. What'd you make of Jalen's day?
Man, I got a lot of respect for Jalen. Man, if he would come to me and ask me for advice what to do, I could understand, man, if he wanted to leave Alabama after having tremendous 2 seasons there. Did he deserve to be benched? It's Alabama, and they're over-recruit. The quarterback they have as a starter, man, was better than him. But to see him, the guts, the wherewithal, the leadership, man, that's grown people stuff. That's not no little kid stuff. He stayed there. Every practice running the scout team. Man, you know what it takes to be able to do that? Don't know if I necessarily had it in me. Salute Jalen. Tremendous, tremendous job of being ready.
It was great. 7 of 9 passing, 82 yards and a touchdown. Another touchdown on the ground on 5 carries for 28 yards. And just added to his Alabama lore. He's led him to a national championship game, took him another season to a national championship win, took another season to the game, and now he led them in a comeback to get back in the playoff, to win the SEC, to complete an undefeated regular season. I also don't think I would have stayed.
The reason, too, I'd be a little careful with this one, because Alabama, even if they lose this game, they still get in the college football playoff system, no matter what would happen. So they still would have gotten in, and Tua is still going to be back the next game.
Absolutely,
as the
but it's still a great moment for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the moment.
But it didn't save their season. It saved his football career.
Correct.
Yes.
Big weekend for CeCe, who was also watching the Ohio State game, both games that you managed to see.
Absolutely.
Private
jet. That's how we do it.
All over the place.
That's how we do this.
Alabama gets the top seed in the playoff race. They'll face number 4, Oklahoma. While 2 vs. 3 will be a battle of unbeaten teams in Clemson and Notre Dame. Georgia and Ohio State left on the outside now looking in. CeCe, did the committee get it right, choosing Oklahoma over Georgia and Ohio State?
I thought they did. I thought they did. You can't have the Power 5 conferences, and you can't have an independent out there that says, okay, if you're able to go undefeated as an independent, given the schedule they had for Notre Dame, yes, they should have been in. And you can't have 2 conference champions in the Power 5, that being Oklahoma and Ohio State, and with them having 1 loss, and you're not going to take either one of them. So the way the playoff is set up, basically, they had to kind of listen to what their bylaws and everything, because the spirit of them setting this up was for the Power 5 conferences. If you're an independent and you have the tough schedule, which Notre Dame did, then you should be able to get in. I don't want to see Georgia, Alabama again, just because Georgia played them tight in this game. No, Georgia's lost twice. They didn't win the SEC. Now, if they win the SEC, I could understand that. You know, I can understand Ohio State not being there with that big loss at Purdue. That was something you can't recover from. Purdue is not a good football team, nor a good football program. At 6-6, when you lose to them by 29 points, you are at the mercy of the court. In the last 2 years, those are the two things that have hurt Ohio State. They didn't deserve to be in the Final Four.
Listen, this was as simple of a last four as I think we've had in the entire system. You had three undefeated teams. They were definitely getting in. We knew the seeding as well. Alabama was going to be one. Clemson was going to be two. Notre Dame was going to be three. And then of the three arguments, you had Ohio State. CC already made the argument against them. You get drilled by a bad team. You then have Georgia, who had not only a 20-point loss to LSU, but two losses on their schedule. And then you have Oklahoma, who had one loss on a neutral site, on a field goal at the gun against their arch rival, who's a good team, and they then avenged that loss this weekend. Like, this to me, any result other than this would have been foolishness. Now, if the only thing I disagree with as far as the conversation surrounding it was, if you really, I heard a lot of people saying it's got to be about the best. The SEC, during the game, Alabama, Georgia, tweeted four best teams. If you really want to have a discussion about the four best teams, then yeah, Georgia should be in it. But it's not Oklahoma who would be getting left out. It'd be Notre Dame. But you can't have a two-loss team jump an undefeated team, especially an undefeated team that's like Notre Dame, which is in its own special category of a non-Power 5 school, but gets kind of the Power 5 consideration. I think the four best teams in the country are Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Georgia, but I don't think you can leave out an undefeated Notre Dame who beat Michigan, Stanford, Virginia Tech, and Syracuse. Like, they did everything they were supposed to do.
So of the possible options, this was the safest four that the committee could pick, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I mean, they got it right. These things are won on the field. If Georgia wins, then we have a different conversation. They've earned their way in it. Alabama, Clemson, they've dominated college football the last several years. So we knew they were going to be at the top. The Irish, when they're independent, and they have a strong enough schedule. They beat Michigan, the head-to-head. Man, people thought Michigan was going to be in the college football playoff until a couple of weeks ago. So Notre Dame should be in at undefeated, and you cannot neglect the Power 5 conference, especially with only having one loss with two teams that are champions of those conferences.
What happened in that Michigan game again?
Basketball, they have a better chance. They're a basketball school.
I'm sorry.
It is unbelievable that for Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, those three teams were in the playoff last year. Alabama and Clemson have been in the playoff for like the two of them at the top of the playoff for the last 3 years. To see those three teams, Oklahoma doing it, quarterback change. Clemson made the playoff back-to-back years a couple years ago after Deshaun Watson left. Alabama obviously has had multiple quarterbacks. Those three programs, Alabama and Clemson in particular, but Oklahoma the last few years have really distinguished themselves among the rest, with Georgia right there as well.
All right, moving on to the Heisman race. Speaking of quarterbacks, where Dwayne Haskins had the type of Big Ten championship performance that'll give voters reason to consider him, along with Tua and Kyler Murray. Haskins threw for nearly 500 yards and five touchdowns in the Buckeyes' 45-24 win over Northwestern. He finishes the regular season with a Big Ten record, 47 touchdown passes and just 8 interceptions. Here he is after Saturday's big game.
I was told JD at the last play it was all worth it. All the workouts, all the sprints, all the meetings, it was worth it. I'm so blessed. I can't believe it. You know, God is good.
There is no denying that this team went through some ups and downs this year, but how your teammates handled adversity, what does it say about your guys to finish in this fashion?
We're a remarkable team, a very, very smart group of young men, and we came together in a tough time, and we showed the world what it's like to come together.
All right, CC, what do you think? Has Haskins really closed the gap in the Heisman race after what you saw this weekend?
Not just this weekend. Throughout the season, he's been consistent. The last two weekends, if you haven't watched, 11 touchdown passes against Michigan, number one defense, and Northwestern, who's representing the other side of the conference in the conference championship. So he's done it at the highest level against the best competition. He's been consistent. I said this before the season. He was going to be the best quarterback that's ever played at Ohio State. They've been playing football 125 years. That institution's never seen someone throw the ball. He can roll out to his right and to his left. He can throw the ball short, intermediate, deep down the field. He's got touch. He's got a cannon. He's a very, very good kid. And I think that the way he's handled himself after taking over for a four-year starter in JT Barrett has been tremendous. And as I said before, being the best at a position to an institution that's had a lot of great players, but not necessarily at quarterback, He's had a tremendous year, and yes, he should be in New York.
And it's not just Ohio State records he's breaking, right? I mean, I was watching the game.
Well, I just think Ohio State, when you put that into context, to be the greatest quarterback in 125 years of that institution's history, I think is fairly significant.
Absolutely, but I was just going to expand it. I mean, to the Big Ten as a whole. Like, he was knocking down Drew Brees' Big Ten records.
Yep.
I mean, and so here's the beef I have with the Heisman. It is considered the highest individual honor for some people in all of sports. Like, that's the way it's billed. And yet, the way it's voted on, it is not given that respect. You know when Tua won this Heisman? At the end of last season, during the comeback against Georgia when he came in. That put him in the pole position, even though what happened last season should have nothing to do with the Heisman this year. We found out during the broadcast that over 10% of Heisman voters have already submitted their ballots before this weekend. The hell are you doing? Like,
now, that's not anything new.
I know.
They've done that before.
No, absolutely. But I think in some years, it's been crystal clear who the winner's going to be. But obviously, some guys just think, oh, no, my mind's made up. Like, here's the reality. Tua's probably going to win it. My vote would be for Kyler Murray. I think there's a strong argument for Dwayne Haskins. But Tua is, of the three guys, third in completion percentage, third in yards, third in touchdowns, second in rating, second in rushing yards. He's not leading in any of the measurables.
But if you're going to argue for Tua, you have to realize, too, he didn't play a lot of time because they were blowing teams out. So these numbers, as gaudy as they are, they could have been even more impressive. Now, it's also, he's on an Alabama team that is undefeated. All those things. He's the best player on the best team, having the type of season that no one in Alabama has ever had. And if you add that extra time of him playing, what do you think his numbers would have been? They would have been even more impressive.
And I understand that part of it, that he wasn't playing fourth quarters for basically the entire season. I get that. I think this is as close of a Heisman race, or it should be as close of a Heisman race as we've seen. I feel like it's a coronation. And that I think Kyler Murray has as good of an argument as anyone. I think as of late, Dwayne Haskins has a great argument, but it feels like some people made up their mind to vote for Tua 5 weeks ago.
I think the indictment on an Oklahoma quarterback or a Big 12 quarterback is, look at the numbers the last quarterback did before this quarterback took over. Now, you can't do that at Ohio State. Been like, oh, man, look at the difference between JT Barrett and this guy. Wow, big difference. Well, let's look at Jalen Hurt compared to Tua. Wow, look at Baker Mayfield. Look at a quarterback before Baker Mayfield, Oklahoma. Look at whoever is the best quarterback in the Big 12. They have gaudy numbers because the defenses are atrocious. So if I'm arguing against him, that's my argument. These defenses are so bad. And you get those numbers in the Big 12 compared to numbers in the SEC, I believe there's no comparison.
I totally agree with that. And I want to make this clear because I hate when we're advocating for one guy, it sounds like we're tearing another guy down. Tua's amazing and has had an amazing season and has as good of a first dozen games or 13 games of a college football career as anyone possibly could have had. I think it's really close, and I think it's unfortunate that 1/9 of the voters have decided before you saw Kyler do what he did and Dwayne do what he did and Tua play ineffectively and get hurt, that their mind was already made up when the conference championship games are supposed to be part of what makes you the Heisman Trophy winner.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, let's get back to the pros. Tom Brady hits one of the greatest milestones of his career. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Kenny is here.
Hey.
Great to see you, Chris.
Good to see you, Jenna. How was your weekend?
Oh, weekend was great.
Okay,
weekend
was good.
Right. It was good. I saw a movie on Saturday.
What movie did you see?
We don't really need details.
I saw the Queen movie.
The Queen movie.
It's called Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
We don't really need the details.
CC gave me great advice on what to do.
Gotcha.
So the first scene it opens
up. Kansy, this is your fault. Let's talk about the page.
So we're about to get a film review?
Here we go. Two thumbs up. Tom Brady and the Patriots taking on the Vikings in Foxborough. Pick this up in the third. Brady to Josh Gordon. Nice throw. Nice catch. Nice touchdown. Pats up 17-10. Fourth quarter now. Vikings pick up the fourth down. Bill Belichick challenges the spot. Adam Thielen felt like maybe one of the Patriots faked an injury to give Belichick time to review it. The two had words. You can read lips. And then they played football again. Patriots up 24-10. Kirk Cousins trying to lead the comeback. And that doesn't help. Picked off in the end zone. Patriots go on to win. They're now 9-3 on the season. Chris Canty will talk about movies later. Are the Patriots rounding into form at exactly the right time, especially considering what happened to the Steelers yesterday?
Well, let me say this. I mean, if you want to talk about movies, I could have told you how this movie was going to play out yesterday at 4 o'clock.
Yep.
I mean, is it December? Right. Was the game in Foxborough?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What did you think was going to happen? Yeah. The New England Patriots are going to win. Brady and Belichick are 59-11 in December. So when you consider that, I mean, it's just 59-11. So that they don't lose a whole lot. I mean, that's an NFL record. So, I mean, that puts into context how good this team is at home in the month of December. They understand the importance of being able to build momentum as we get closer and closer to the postseason. For me, when I looked at that game, I feel like that game was lost by the Vikings in the sequence of series coming out of the halftime. So before the half, you're able to work the two-minute drill. You get a touchdown out of it. Your defense had done a great job of holding the Patriots' offense down. Coming out of the half, the Patriots get the ball. Your defense forces a three and out, then, you know, you're not able to do a whole lot with the football. And then, of course, you go three and out, you give the ball back to the Patriots. They put together a 12-play drive, but Gostkowski misses the field goal. And so then you end up getting the ball back. I think you only get 3 points out of it, and then the Patriots come back and they score a touchdown. Then you have another possession where you don't get any points out of it. You give the ball back to them. They score a touchdown again. I mean, this is a New England Patriots team that at home had only scored less than 30 points once, and that was the first game of the season against the Houston Texans. So if you're the Vikings offense, you know you got to score points at some point in that game. Your defense kept it close for the majority of the game, for the first 2.5 quarters. But then when Kirk Cousins is not being able to sustain drives, when you're 3 of 12 on third downs and you don't have a lot of opportunities in the red area, you're going to come up short against the Patriots in Foxborough every single time.
And this is where the Patriots, like, this is where they're so special, and this is why they're the most consistent team across all of sports, is they weren't great offensively, and they still won by 2 scores. They, all of a sudden, just at the time you need it the most, let's have our best defensive performance of the year. Let's Jedi mind meld the Minnesota Vikings into not running the football. Now, I understand they've run the football less than any team all year long. They have John DeFilippo. They have been a pass Kirk Cousins friendly offense. But Dalvin Cook had 9 carries for 84 yards. That's 9.5 a carry. And the question there is, why did you only have 9? Like, why did they not do that more often? The Patriots convinced them your best shot to beat us is throw the football repeatedly, and you hold them to where their only touchdown of the game was what you said, right before the half. They tried to out-Patriots the Patriots, score right before the half, make sure you can't then score with enough time left. I think they had 15 seconds left in New England. And now all of a sudden, this is a bad loss for Minnesota that I know we'll get into, and for New England, they're exactly where they want to be right now. Positioned to have a bye. They have the tiebreaker over Houston. If Kansas City drops one, they have the tiebreaker over Kansas City. And Pittsburgh, who they get to play later, they are a game and a half up on Pittsburgh. So they are perfectly positioned, despite, once again, I didn't think they were overwhelming offensively. Brady talked during the week, I want to take more chances. I'm being a little too careful with the ball. He threw a pick that you thought might allow Minnesota to get back in the game. Cousins gave it right back. It's Patriots at home at Foxborough. You said it exactly right.
I'm with you, Jenna. Jenna and I are tired of trying to convince people about New England. they're not going to be any good. When it's time to start passing out the trophies, they're going to be there.
No doubt.
And I had a unique perspective on this weekend, and it was based on Saturday at the Big Ten Championship. I end up bumping into Jonathan Kraft, all right, Mr. Kraft's son. And I know him because I went with the family to Israel and everything. We were there. He's representing Northwestern. He's got a daughter there, and he's friends with the president of the university. And he was like, you want to go to the game tomorrow? And I was like, no, unfortunately, I got some stuff I got to do here. I wish I could. I wish I could have jumped on his private jet and gone to New England to watch him play the Vikings. He said, oh, you don't want to come because it's going to be a rough game for the Vikings. And I was like, Jonathan. I mean, Jonathan's aggressive. He's not no real big guy, but typically people don't fire off like that. And then I was like, man, please tell your dad thank you for the message, the birthday message we had on the show.
Yeah.
And he said, man, you're one of my dad's favorites. I'm getting ready to call him right now. I talked to Mr. Kraft, and I was like, man, I'm thinking about coming to the game tomorrow. You don't want to come up here, Chris. We're not having it. And I'm like, my goodness. I mean, we know Belichick. I mean, we know Brady.
Yeah.
But you're not thinking Jonathan Kraft on a Saturday night in Indianapolis, he's going to be telling me you don't want none of this. I mean, it's the philosophy of the organization. Like, they win top to bottom. We're not surprised. This is what's going to happen. They're going to be in the Final Four. That's what they do. And the rest of the league, They just set it up for him every year. A few weeks ago, we were talking about all the Monday night game, they scoring all these points. The standard in this league, I know we got the logo and everything. Everyone's always said, let's protect the logo. If we're going to talk about championships, though, first we need to change the trophy to Belichick's name on it.
Wow.
But the standard is in New England and what they do at Gillette. All this other stuff is just hodgepodge just till we get to the end of the movie. We know what the end means, and we know New England is going to be part of the storyline at the end.
It's trendy. The high, the points, the high-scoring offenses, oh, the hype, it's all trendy. You said it a couple weeks ago. If you make New England your standard, the button it up, focus on the next week and not 5 weeks out, focus on what you have to do to win. It doesn't have to be flashy, get your first downs, walk out of there and win. That should be your standard because that's actually sustainable.
Well, but okay, agreed. But there's a lot of things that should be standards that are only, you can only make it your standard if you have the ingredients for that.
Well, this is what we can do, Jenna. It's our show. It's our standard.
No.
Okay, Jenna and I, as we talk about these teams, until someone changes it, because we have history on our side to believe, and nothing, no one's out there changing history. Remember Philadelphia? Oh, it's fun to work here. They not even going to be in the playoffs potentially. Mm-hmm. So it's not trendy.
No. The point that I was making isn't that when you're analyzing it, you shouldn't look at them in the standard. The point I'm making is the reason more teams don't emulate it is because they can't emulate it.
We're not talking about teams. How we should analyze them.
Got it. I was talking about teams. I was responding to the reason when we're talking about the league as a whole. Why don't more teams do it the New England way? Well, it's hard if you don't have Brady and Belichick.
Because a lot of the coaches don't believe in it, Jenna. Right. They don't believe in it. They think their way is better, and it's turned out that the Patriot way.
Just ask Doug Peterson. Exactly.
Well, that's what it comes down to. But ultimately, it's the culture that allows New England to have that sustained success. And you thought with the Minnesota Vikings, with that championship caliber defense, that they were going to be able to infuse some more talent onto that roster, particularly at the quarterback position with Kirk Cousins making $28 million a year. Yesterday's game was a game that Kirk Cousins needed to show up.
That's why
you
paid him.
That's why you paid him all that money.
I can bring down the Vikings for y'all.
But
y'all can blame it on the quarterback. But what about DeFilippo? What about the lack of tight end productivity? What about you only got two weapons on the outside? So Bill Belichick, you're going to tell him we're only going to throw to the guys on the outside. All right. Stephon Diggs and Thielen, they're the two number one targets. You cannot play New England and be one-dimensional. So I knew this was going to happen.
Exactly.
You don't have a tight end threat. You don't have a running game. The only result is for you to get choked out.
The thing is this, they could have had a running game. Like, that's where this is. I understand that. Like,
you thought they were just going to change for this game?
I've
been watching the Vikings.
I thought that was the spot that you knew what Belichick was going to try to take away was either Thielen or Diggs, one of them at least. And I thought that the Vikings potentially would see, if we have success early on the ground, let's stick
with
it.
That's John DeFilippo, that next great young mind. Everyone's trying to make the next quarter, next great guru. All right. He called those plays. Don't be blaming Kirk Cousins. He called those plays. So if we're going to start talking about breaking it down, this game plan I thought was awful. One-dimensional, and they ate that game plan up. New England, of course, Jenna.
And they left it with a loss. All right, Candy, stick around. Coming up, did the Steelers' Super Bowl hopes go out the window with their loss to the Chargers next on First Things First? Back here, First Things First, Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt. First time, long time, not in a box, but right over here.
Right in the flesh.
What up, man?
In the
good
flesh.
To see you.
What's
great
going on,
great to see
Welcome,
you.
Man. I see you got on your blue. You representing Michigan? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. That was a couple weeks ago.
No representation. My wife just says it's
Monday.
My good color.
Welcome to Buckeye TV.
Go.
Oh, I mean, excuse me. First
of all, Buckeye.
He's got to get it all out of his system. Get it all out of the system.
Oh, no.
All right, Joel, the final four for the college football playoff has been set. Alabama is number one, taking on number four, Oklahoma. While 2 vs. 3 will be a battle of unbeaten teams in Clemson and Notre Dame. Georgia and Oklahoma left on the outside looking in. Joel, we'll start with you. Did the committee get this right, going with Oklahoma for that final spot?
I was actually proud of the committee. I thought that they exercised an incredible amount of restraint. I thought that there was way too much discussion out there publicly in support of Georgia, a two-loss non-champ. I would have lost my mind if Georgia was in this playoff. There's no doubt about that. So I thought that they exercised a good amount of restraint and honored a championship won by Oklahoma, a great team. I feel like in Oklahoma, the fact of the matter is that you had three teams that they were arguing between. And I felt like Ohio State probably got the short end of the stick, and I know that doesn't make you feel any better to at least acknowledge it, CC, but
no,
the bottom line is...
I'm a realist. I'm not one of those teams, I'm the guy's going to support my team. Like, if you lose to Purdue...
By 29.
Absolutely. And the style for which they lost to him. Like, you are... You've almost forfeited. You punted on the chance to be able to get in there unless you get a bunch of help.
So think about it like this. I thought that the committee, and here's the problem, is that no one really knows the criteria, right? We're all just sitting here
and
we're waiting.
And with the committee members changing year after year, the criteria can shift.
I think I've nailed it after whatever amount of 5 years now. First of all, if you just look at the committee's decision through this vein, path of least resistance, right, because this is still a political committee by nature. Why? Because they have current ADs sitting on here. They've got to go back and be in this realm. Path of least resistance. And then also, what are these teams at their worst? So floor. So if you look at those two things, path of least resistance and floor, you always get to the four teams that they put in there. And if you say, okay, path of least resistance means that you're going to avoid the argument of trying to put a two-loss non-champ in, yep. And then you start looking at the floor of those three teams. The loss for Oklahoma was a three-point loss to a ranked Texas team, and each Georgia and Ohio State had 20-plus point losses in this season, one to LSU for Georgia, and then obviously that Purdue game.
Well, does that mean the four best teams are in?
No.
No.
Are you okay with that?
I'm absolutely okay with that. I've always been more... honoring of the championships and one that thinks it should be most deserving. You've got to earn it on the field.
It has to be about deserving and not best, which is one of the reasons why, and we won't get into it, my UCF Golden Knights have been snubbed again because it's about deserving, not best. But we'll leave that there. I do want to ask you this.
Oh, that's funny.
In your eyes, did Jalen Hurts save Alabama? Because if Alabama, you said you would have lost your mind if Georgia got in with two losses. I don't think you would have lost your mind if Georgia had won and then Alabama still got in.
No, I would have lost my mind for that as well.
Really?
Yeah, because we got to stop giving Alabama a get-out-of-jail-free card, right? I mean, so let's just take a trip down memory lane here. Do you know that before 2011, the only other team in the AP poll era that won a national championship and didn't win their conference championship was in the 30s, and it was Minnesota, and that was the first year of the AP poll. Okay, and then all of a sudden 2011 rolls around, and we let Alabama rematch against LSU, and they win the national championship. Then they win the national championship last year, didn't win the SEC. If they would have gotten in again and won another national championship without winning a conference title, then all of a sudden you look around their trophy case, they would have had more national titles than they do SEC championship trophies.
But do you think they would have gotten in, though?
I think that they would have, and I'm glad that we avoided that situation because, again, I would have lost my mind.
I mean, Alabama, to me, I'm totally on the other side. They earned it throughout the season. Their ability to be consistent.
But against who?
Whoever was on the schedule.
I mean, an average LSU team?
Okay, outside of Clemson, who else has this impressive resume? Yeah. Are you convinced about Notre Dame?
No, I'm not convinced about
Notre
Dame.
Okay, what about that defense of Oklahoma? How many points are they going to give up in a big game?
Probably
a real football, not
54.
Big 12. Okay. So, I mean, what Alabama has done.
It's been historic. You're right.
Yeah, and their defense. So, even if you didn't have the quarterback. So, for me, Jalen didn't save their season. They were already in.
Okay, but hold on. Is a championship game a postseason game? A conference championship game? Is that a postseason game?
I would say so, yes.
Okay, yeah. So... in what realm of reality do you ever move on in the postseason loss?
We've been doing this in college football. It's an imperfect system.
Did you get to go play the Broncos after the missed field goals?
No, but I'm just operating within what they're operating.
I get it.
And if you are able to be as dominant as Alabama is, you can make the case for, man, they're as good as an Oklahoma team. Now, I understand the power conference, the five and everything. We just don't want to see rematches.
Yeah.
Maybe if the conversation was different, but the rematches, that's the thing I think that people want eliminated from the final
four. I don't know if the Tide was that dominant when they were tied at 10 with the Citadel in November.
But then they score like 50 straight after that. I mean, listen, I think we avoided...
Tied at 10
I get
halftime.
That. But
this is something that they're kids, and these kids are inconsistent emotionally. So
that's
it's not about coaching.
That's true.
So that happens more in college than we're going to see on the pros.
Let's be glad that we avoided this debate.
Which we basically just had.
Right.
Well, before
right.
we move on from Alabama, I do want to ask you about Jalen Hurts. It's such a great story. How much does what you saw this weekend alter his course at all for what he ends up doing?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that Jalen – in the future is going to have a harder time making a career of football just because his passing acumen is not probably to a standard that an NFL team is going to say, hey, we want you to be our guy as a franchise quarterback like they would with Tua. But this is such an unbelievable lesson of perseverance, character, integrity, commitment, all of those different things. I was so happy for him when I saw him come into the game, play as well as he did. You talk about a guy prepared for his opportunity, and it's not his first opportunity. He had it ripped from his heart. I mean, he was a great player, an SEC Player of the Year. He's in a national championship game. It doesn't go well for two quarters, and all of a sudden, boom, he's on the sideline. And yet he was still preparing himself for his next opportunity. It happened in their biggest moment. They're down 14 a couple of times, and he comes out and maybe plays his best game as a Alabama quarterback.
You said it's a great story of perseverance. I want to make this part clear. I wouldn't have thought any less of Jalen Hurts if he had transferred.
I agree.
Right? Like I agree. I don't think we should. I don't want it to sound like this is Kelly Bryant. This is what you missed out.
No, I support Kelly Bryant.
Right? Absolutely.
No doubt.
And I'm glad that. Even though he stayed, he got this moment. Like, sports don't always work out like that. Now, on the Heisman, I thought during the broadcast, you did a really good job of bringing up the fact that, hey, this isn't just a two-man race.
Sure.
That Dwayne Haskins has had a historic season.
Sure.
During the game, he had already set almost all the Ohio State records. Mm-hmm. And during the game, he broke some of Drew Brees' Big Ten records conference-wide. I think you can make a very strong case for either of the three, Tua, Kyler, or Haskins. I don't think there's a wrong answer. The only, to me, wrong answer is, and you alluded to it on the broadcast, is the guys, and I know it's not the first year this has happened, but the 10, 11, 12% of voters that decided don't need to see what happens in conference championship weekend. I'm gonna get an early start on my Thanksgiving and submit my ballot early. That I didn't like. I would vote Kyler, but I can listen to an argument for any of the three.
Yeah, this feels a little awkward, guys. You know why?
Why?
I agreed with everything he just said.
Yeah, you're on the. Yeah, that's.
I don't know about.
I thought he was gonna say I voted for undisputed for 16 things.
I totally agree. I think that any one of these players can be put in the first spot through the third spot. You can make an argument any direction. The only thing that I have no time for is somebody that told me last week it's all wrapped up and I'm gonna put my ballot in before watching what just happened. And frankly, after what happened in the championship games. I won't be surprised at all if Kyler walks away with the trophy. I would have been a little surprised before this last week, but the way that those games played out, Tua going down, you can't really show me a game in which Tua carried his team to a victory. Now, he carried them to blowouts, and he was a huge reason why, which is why you can easily put him at the number one spot. But Kyler Murray was the most important player to his team throughout the season, and Dwayne Haskins was right next to him, right behind him, and carried Ohio State for a section of this season in which their defense and run game were not playing near up to their capabilities. I think all three of those guys were phenomenal, and I think it's a really cool year to see these three guys hopefully in New York.
Yeah, I think Tua was penalized because they were so good, and the reason why they were so good is because of him.
That's a good
and
point.
What I've seen him operate that offense, because let's just take this. This would be one of the criteria I think people should look at. Who did these kids replace in the same offense, and what is that offense doing now? So let's go to Tyler right there in Oklahoma, what he's doing. Baker Mayfield, they did basically the same thing. You could argue Kyler's a little bit better. Oh, okay, but in the Big 12, these are the numbers they put up year in, year out. Let's go to Ohio State. What did he do after taking over a four-year starter, JT Barrett? Oh, broke all his records.
All of them.
The best passer in the great 125-year history at Ohio State.
And in the Big Ten.
So now let's go to Tua. Drew Brees there, too. So now let's go to Tua and what he did in Alabama. We saw he took over for Jalen. This is a totally different offense. This is like my man with the Rams running Alabama's offense now. So the difference in how these offenses operated, I think Tua was very, very special. He got nicked because they were blowing teams out.
Yeah.
Haskins were very, very special. Him and Kyler were very, very special. But I just believe Tua, what he did for the number one team would make him give him that little edge over the other two.
A small argument. You're absolutely right, which is why it's easy to put Tua at number one. Small argument would be that I did not see Dwayne Haskins' backup or Kyler Murray's backup have to come in 14 points down and clean up a mess and actually win a football game for their team this year.
Yeah, but it's one of those kind of things.
That's going to hurt Tua,
when I've aced the midterm, I've aced all the quizzes, the final, I missed a couple answers.
I know.
Sure, but what you also didn't see, and this is why you can circular argument, what you also didn't see was Tua ever lose a game.
Sure.
And you saw both of those guys lose a game.
That's
I do feel like if we had no knowledge of the 2017 football season, Kyler would be the heavy favorite. I think because Baker did what he did at Oklahoma and because Tua did what he did in the national championship game, that Tua started this year way ahead.
Both of these kids, Tua and Haskins, when I saw them throw the ball, I knew they were special throwing the
Different.
Ball. So I didn't go back to the Michigan game when Haskins came in and saved the Buckeyes. No, I didn't go to the national championship. They were already special, just waiting to get on the stage. They got on the stage, and they performed. They did not let us down.
And by the way, Dwayne's a remarkable kid. I just got to say that because I've gotten to meet him, obviously, yes. And talk with him a few times. And
just out of curiosity, of the three, who do you think has the highest ceiling, the most potential? The next
as a
level?
Pro?
As
yeah.
a pro? Oh,
I think
it's all situational, but Haskins, because of his stature and his quick release.
Kyler going to be playing baseball.
Someone is going to come up with a system, and Tua is going to be throwing darts in the NFL. Him and Haskins, you can't teach big. That's what Haskins got. But Haskins got to stay in school another year.
He should.
Back here with Chris Canty. We are going viral. So yesterday before the Titans and Jets game, Tennessee head coach Mike Vrabel got in on the action with his linemen. Is this a common thing for head coaches to do, guys?
Not at all. But you can see they're getting real physical with Mike Vrabel. Yeah, all them padded practices, coach? Yeah. Yeah. It's a chance for some get back.
I like Vrabel as a coach. I like the hands-on. This is stuff he's doing also during the week. He's a young coach. The point, a lot of times,
he broke his shoulder.
You can teach better when you interact. And the guys, they love a coach who can demonstrate just a little bit. It's the footwork, the handwork, because we're visual learners. So a lot of times. Typically, he runs 110s up and down. He runs like 15, 20 of them.
Okay.
Man, he's a beast out
them
there.
Them striders
all
out
right.
there.
Yes. Yeah. He's doing it with a 3-to-1 rest ratio. Jenna, you would approve of
I
that.
I already do.
In the Miami Heat, I had him the first game of the season.
Let me tell you this, though, CeCe. I'm all set on them striders. I done ran enough of that. We all good
oh,
with
that's
that
my
right
regular
now.
Workout.
Oh, I'm cool with the suit and tie.
I knock out 15 of those in 20 minutes. Do a minute
Wait,
warm-up.
You do 15, okay.
15-second runs. Oh, incline to 3 degrees. Miles per hour at 12. Finishing at 12. Yes, Jenna. That's how we do it.
Guess what I'm doing at 10 o'clock this morning.
Let me tell you what I ain't going to do.
16
of them. None of those.
Back to Sunday Night Football. Steelers in the driver's seat most of the game. In this one, there's Phillip Rivers. He had a good game. Up 16 in the first half. Chargers mount the comeback. All the way in the fourth, they take the first lead with just over 8 minutes to go. Justin Jackson found the end zone. Pittsburgh responds. Big Ben Roethlisberger hits Jalen Samuels for the score. Chargers now with a shot to win the game. Mike Bagley, boom, misses the field goal attempt. Hold down. Turns out the Steelers were offsides. Offsides. Second attempt, this one, blocked. Hold on. Steelers offsides again. Offsides. Third time would be the charm. Nails it through the uprights. Chargers win it 33-30. Whoo, here's Phillip Rivers on the win after the game.
We hadn't had a win like this in a long time. I mean, where we've been down like that and fought back and won. And I know it's never happened here. I just saw that 176-0-1 or 174-0-1 with a 16-point lead at home in the history of the Steelers. So pretty heck of an accomplishment today.
I hate losing at home. I hate it for our fans. I hate, losing it for my linemen and the rest of these guys. But we'll come in tomorrow. We'll look at it and we'll move on.
You might get a different explanation on Tuesday on his radio show than that. Canty, what did the Chargers prove in their comeback win yesterday?
Well, I think the Chargers proved that they're for real and they can compete with any team in the AFC. And so when I look at their positioning right now, they still got a matchup with Kansas City left. It feels like this is a team that kind of controls their own fate to a degree. And so I think that this Chargers team coming into this season, they were talented. You said that they were probably going to take that next step defensively just based on where Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa were. And then, of course, adding a playmaker on the back end in Derwin James, who showed up again yesterday.
He's awesome.
He's having an outstanding rookie year. But, I mean, when you looked at the weapons that Phillip Rivers had to work with on the offensive side of the ball, even without Melvin Gordon, I mean, they had Austin Eckler, and then they had the Justin Jackson. He showed up in the second half big time. But ultimately – When it came to the last drive and being able to win and put themselves in position to win, he trusted Keelan Allen, who is a sneaky, underrated receiver.
He really is.
One of the better receivers in the National Football League. They were able to make the requisite plays to be able to put themselves in position to win that game. I'm just, when I look at the Steelers side of this, I'm a little bit disappointed in them. Because after Ben Roethlisberger had the comments earlier in the week being critical of his teammates and trying to explain away the mistake with the interception at the end of the Denver Broncos game, you thought he would come out and have a better performance. I didn't see a very sharp Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, he's missing wide open throws
or you
that can be game-changing plays.
You at least thought if he didn't have a sharp performance, he'd do what he said he always does, hold himself accountable. Right. Talk about, oh, this one's on me. I know we're going to talk about Cam in a little bit. Cam played a terrible game, at least in the post-game press conference, came out and said, I take this one personally. This one's on me. But on the Chargers, to answer your question, what they did in the second half was nothing short of spectacular. They only had three drives in the second half because of the punt return touchdown. So they lost one chance in offensive drive. First one, 13 plays, 88 yards, touchdown and the two-point conversion. Second one, 7 plays, 79 yards, touchdown and the two-point conversion. Third one, 11 plays, 64 yards, and the field goal to win it. So they were long fields every time. Mm-hmm. They had no margin of error, as you're not going to have when you're down 16 entering the second half. And they were great. And on the other side of the ball defensively, here's what Pittsburgh did on their first three drives. 7 plays, 28 yards, punt. Mm-hmm. 5 plays, 2 yards, punt. 3 plays, 5 yards, punt. So they went through a 6-possession stretch plus a punt return where they were flawless. Both sides of the ball, offense, defense, which is what you had to be to execute this comeback. And now Canny's right. They are either the Chiefs or the Chargers. One of them is going to be 13-3-ish, 12-4, 13-3, and the 5 seed. One of them is going to have to go to a 9 or 10 win Pittsburgh team in the first round, most likely, because two of the best three teams in the AFC are in the same division.
And to me, this is about Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, and getting this team ready to play in an electric environment. Being down by 16 points, Nick said the stats earlier as far as in at that time, up at that mark, up by 2 touchdowns.
The Steelers at home, had if they're up by 2 touchdowns at any point in their history, 220-0-2 going into yesterday.
So, so now being able to get his young team with their veteran quarterback to have confidence and to be able to rally. Because let me tell you, the Chargers, they got an awful situation this year as far as their team. Their home field advantage. Oh, they don't have it. Phillip Rivers is traveling from the home where he's been living, commuting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never even heard of a story like this in the NFL where a guy is traveling that far, a starting guy, just to be able to get to practice. So they have a number of distractions that would keep them from focusing on what they're doing. But they're really, really talented. The story of the first half of the game was Derwin James. Because if he's not in the game, oh, they're up by 3 touchdowns at least. He was spectacular. And he reminded me of Sean Taylor with his ability to play in the middle of the field. He can blitz the passer. He can cover people, tight ends, running back in space, and a great, great tackler. He is one of the great talents that we have in this league, and you could see it on display last night.
How much murkier now does this make the Steelers' playoff picture as far as where they'll be seated?
Well, I think the Steelers are still going to win their division. Now, the Baltimore Ravens have won 3 straight with Lamar Jackson, but I don't trust him as a passer. And eventually, especially this time of year in the NFL, you got to have your quarterback be able to win from the pocket. Lamar Jackson has not evolved into a guy that can consistently do that. So I trust the Steelers to win the division. But the one thing that did show up yesterday that has been a concern all year long is their defense. When you have a double-digit lead at home, you got to find a way to be able to close the show.
Yes.
And they allow too many yards both in the ground game and then in the passing game.
23 unanswered points they allowed.
But that's my whole point, though. Your defense couldn't get off the field. You allowed them to sustain drives. And if they're able to pick up third downs, pick up first downs, eventually that offense is going to be able to score points. And that's the one thing that the Steelers have to be able to fix if they consider themselves a contender and they want to actually win a playoff game.
I think a lot of times when we talk about the Steelers, we're either talking about one soundbite off of off an interview or we're talking about one play. We do a lot of the blame game with Pittsburgh. But for me, I don't think that we should be talking about Ben Roethlisberger as much. Collectively, this was bad. For the organization, it was bad. They were not well coached, even down to the end of the game. You are not going to jump offside or allow your guys to jump offside in a tie game. Why jump offside and give the kicker another opportunity? Have you ever seen this?
I've never seen
that. When the coach told you, hey, Chris, you guys can jump offside. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter because every time you jump offside, the percentages of you winning or losing the game, they go down because it's going to get easier for him. So that was stupid. Mike Tomlin should have never allowed that to happen. Special teams, when you have that type of margin, how do you allow the team to get back in the game? Give up a big play, either mm-hmm. a big kick return, kickoff return, or a big punt return. Mm-hmm. They did that. Their defense. So for me, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would just spread the blame around. That's why I don't believe that Pittsburgh is a threat to win the Super Bowl. And that's why I was worried about Pittsburgh early in the season, because the last two or three years, they have not had great leadership coming out of that locker room, and they have always been just what about this? Well, what about that? That's been the story of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Pittsburgh a month ago on Thursday Night Football hung 50 on Carolina, a Carolina team that up to that point was playing really well. They got to 6-2-1. They had a mini bye coming up. They were set right at that moment, the two seed in the AFC position brilliantly. Since then, they went to Jacksonville, should have lost that game. Yep. They stole it. Instead of that being a rallying moment for them, that was, we now see, part of this they downward trend. Way. They lose in Denver, and then they absolutely blow a game against the Chargers to where now their biggest game of the year against New England might be a relatively meaningless one as far as who's going to be the top seeds in the AFC, who's going to have a bye. Pittsburgh's road to the Super Bowl, if it exists, now goes through the road without a bye.
And if we're not careful, people will think, oh, Pittsburgh played. They played a bad half. They played two bad quarters. Any team can. No, they've actually played 10 bad quarters because mm-hmm. even with that big lead, the lead should have been even bigger at halftime. The four bad quarters in Denver, the two there in Jacksonville. So that, man, 10 out of the last 12 quarters they have played have been awful football. And that's not what you want to see from championship caliber organizations or championship caliber teams.
The Pittsburgh Steelers have now lost two in a row. They are 7-4-1 after last night's loss to the Chargers. Candy, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, what's gone so wrong for the aforementioned Cam Newton and the Panthers? That's next on First Things First. Let's move on to Cam Newton and the Panthers now. They dropped their fourth in a row, losing to the Bucks of all teams, 24-17. Cam Newton wasn't his best, threw four picks just days after he came out and said he was playing the best football of his career. Panthers are now 6-6. Afterwards, Cam accepted responsibility for the loss.
I take this one personal, you know, being that, I just got to play better. That's what it comes down to. As a signal caller, as a quarterback, you know, it's hard to point blame when you got to first account for yourself in the mirror. And, when I look back at this game, it really comes down to protecting the football. Who knows where we'd go, whether it was we was in field goal range and, you know, it could have led to, you know, just a fresh start, but whatever. You know, it just comes down to myself being able to, you know, protect the ball.
All right, I want to get into that, but my first question is there like a tank top under the blazer, or is it just blazer on skin?
It was blazer. It was a three-piece suit, I think, with the vest and then no shirt. He was missing the collared shirt.
Okay, so of the three options to wear as clothing, he chose the shirt to be the one he
left the shirt.
Okay,
on it.
I just want to make sure I got
that. Cam's one of the worst dressers we've seen in pro sports. Nick might think something else, but he's definitely one of the worst dressers. He looked like he's headed, after the game, I'm headed to a pimp convention. Okay? Like that's where he looks like. He didn't look like an NFL brand right there.
It always looks better after wins than losses.
That will never look good. That never looked good on the rack. That never looked good on a mannequin. That never looked good.
See, let me tell you something, because this is one of your favorite phrases. We're just going to have to chalk this up to a difference of philosophy, because I think Cam's one of the best dressers in sports history, if you can pull it off. It's tough to pull off after a four-interception game.
I was going to say,
how do you pull off a top hat?
What?
How do you pull off a top hat in a three-piece? Like, how do you pull that off, Nick? Tell me.
Well,
Tell me.
I couldn't. Anyway. I wouldn't try to. I'm not 6'5", 245 Cam Newton.
You can't just put anything on your body.
Cam can. Look at that, apparently.
And I don't know if that's
a
top hat.
With a big necklace.
Okay, what kind of hat is that then, Nick?
I don't know the name of it. I'm sure Chris.
Last guy had on a hat like that, he parked my car.
I think it's a bowler hat. I don't think it's a top hat.
Regardless, there is seemingly a disconnect between wearing an outfit like that and then taking the game upon yourself. It's hard for me to take him serious. I'm really sorry. This is on me.
Okay, let's not talk about the clothes anymore, though, because it has nothing to do with how he played.
Of course not. I'm just saying it's hard to really buy into what he's saying. But
it's hard for me. Because my mom and my brother, who played in the NBA, they always told me if you dress good, you play good. So for me, I do watch what people, because they're delivering a message how they dress. The message last week was, I'm playing the best football of my career. Oh, okay. Thanks for telling us that, because we were saying that. He shouldn't have been saying that, which led to him, like we see a lot of times in the NFL, as soon as you think you got it figured out, here comes an uppercut. And this game right here against Tampa Bay, at this stage of his career, I was shocked by it. I was shocked how he just continued to make bad reads and force the ball. Like, he could have run some of those opportunities. He wasn't trying to run. He was convinced that he knew he was going to pick this defense apart, and they played him perfectly. They rushed four people. They knew he wasn't going to be able to build the cipher between the under coverage, the deep coverage, and Cam. Man, he played like he played in his first 3 years. I was shocked by it.
It was an inexcusable loss. Like, listen, he had as many turnovers yesterday as he had in the first 8 games of the season. And wow. And that was when he was playing some of the best, if not the best, football of his career. And not coincidentally, that's when the team was 6-2. Everyone has shredded this Tampa Bay defense. It's one of their quarterbacks are on pace to throw for nearly 6,000 yards. There's two reasons Tampa's been a bad team. Their quarterbacks have turned the ball over at a historic rate, Fitzpatrick and Jameis, and that defense is terrible. The pick before the first half was a huge game-changing play because instead of them getting points, Tampa then went down the other end and they got points. Despite that, the Carolina defense, which has been kind of on struggle mode a lot of this year, allowing more than 24 points per game, did its job in the second half. And every time they crossed midfield, it seemed like Cam made another mistake. There was a play we didn't show in the highlights where Devin Funchess is running wide open when they're down 7. Cam just misses him. They had chance after chance, and Cam played his worst game of the year. I mean, there's no excusing it. There's no justifying it. He's in year 8. This was a critical game.
But is there a way to explain it? Why do you think his focus seemingly was just off? His accuracy was off. His decision-making was off. Maybe the word is not focus, but what was off yesterday with Cam Newton?
Well, for one, they have a problem with Olsen being limited in the time he's been hurt. He came back. Now he's out again. They've been absent of a tight end. Funchess, how dependable has he been? Have these receivers taken that next jump? Now, DJ Moore, I believe ultimately he is going to be a star in this league. How they attack defenses, they don't have the offensive firepower to be able to overcome average special teams and poor defense. So it's a collection as a team. Cam Newton is the face of the franchise, so no different than Aaron Rodgers. When the team don't play well, who do we go after? You got to go after the face of the franchise. That's why people won't be talking about these other things. But collectively, as a team, this is not. And the problem now is, as a quarterback, if you're playing the best football of your career, you need to realize my defense is not that good. So I need to have possession of the ball. I can't afford to turn the ball over because I'm not going to be able to win. So that was my biggest problem with yesterday's game is I know Carolina's defense hadn't been good. Does Cam know that? Because he didn't play yesterday's game like that.
Can't listen, you were so shocked at the beginning of the year when I didn't pick Carolina to make the playoffs. I looked at their injuries on their offensive line.
Yeah, well, I know you like to support Cam, that was shocking.
Yeah, but you also thought they were positioned with Norv Turner to have a big year. You thought Cam could be in the MVP discussion. And I thought offensive line questions. I didn't know if I believed in Christian McCaffrey as a feature back. I thought this team was going to struggle in a very difficult division. They jump out to 6-2, and that Steelers game has been the turning point of their season in a negative way. The following week, they have some missed kicks. They go for the two-point conversion against Detroit. That was a game where Cam played great until that two-point conversion throw. They then lose a tough one to Seattle. But that game yesterday is inexcusable. It's one thing to lose to Pittsburgh. It's another game to lose because your kicker's not has a terrible game. Another thing to lose to a really good or a surging Seattle team. To lose to Tampa with your season on the line, because that's what it was yesterday, with two games left against New Orleans, I don't see how you can make a playoff push at this point. It was terrible, and Cam picked a terrible time for his worst game he's played in a couple years.
The only thing that is inexcusable, Jenna, is exactly what you and I mentioned before. It's his wardrobe. You control that. You control what you're wearing. You can have a bad day playing. Like, that's going to happen in the NFL. But you can't have a bad day dressing when you got tailors. You have stylists. You have all these things, Jenna, all these things that we control. Like, we control what we wear. If we get on here and look bad, you know whose fault it is? It ain't the show's fault. It ain't Kettle's fault. It's our fault. So, Cam, I can't even remember what his stat line was. After I saw the press conference, that was my full focus. How could I break down?
That wasn't even the most outrageous thing he's worn. One of the three most outrageous things he's worn all year.
Outrageous? He just wasn't wearing it.
He went to a press conference in a bathrobe, Jenna.
He had no shirt.
But they won that game.
No shirt. Gotta go.
Yeah.
No shirt. More
if you're in the fashion, someone
this.
Call Cam. Someone do something for him, like, so we don't have to see this.
Welcome back to First Things First. We are going viral. Last night, the Chargers and Steelers faced off on Sunday Night Football. Plenty of storylines, but one in particular caught Texans defensive end J.J. Watt's attention. J.J.'s brother T.J. Watt and Derek Watt were facing off against each other, so he posted this picture on the gram with the caption, "Man, this is cool," and it was.
I feel like Derek doesn't get enough shine. I mean, for the third brother that's in the league.
Of course not. Neither did.
I feel like, no, but TJ has gotten a lot of shine this year, and he's got 10 sacks. I feel like a lot of fans last night, that was the first time they found out there was a third wide.
The reason why you don't
NFL.
Get that much shine is when you're not that good, Nick. Like, what do you say? He don't even have no nickname. His mama named the other one TJ, the other one JJ, and the dude, what's your name?
Derek.
Yeah, let you know. Gene pool had been sucked by the time we got to him.
So, because his middle name is John. So if they'd have named
he
him
he had
DJ,
plenty of opportunity to be DJ.
Right. And if yeah, they had, was, instead of Nick, being a...
He's the runt of the litter, bro. The rest of them is thoroughbreds. He's the runt of the litter.
That
like,
reminds
let's stop
me.
Playing.
That ain't nice, man.
Oh, okay.
Who's
All
the,
right.
See.
Did I just make this up?
No, but it
Okay, why didn't America know about him? Because he's the runt. The other ones are champion dog. Champion
I mean, he
breed.
Still made the NFL.
So what? There's a pecking order in there, too. You're barely in the door compared to I'm a stud.
Stories to start your morning. We need more nicknames.
It's like me and you
on
being on the show. We're on the show,
poor
but we ain't alike. That's for sure.
Poor DJ.
What? We're sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel today. The final four for the college football playoffs are set. Alabama, number one, taking on number four, Oklahoma. 2-3 is going to be a battle of unbeaten teams in Clemson and Notre Dame. So that means Georgia and Ohio State were left on the outside looking in. See, did the committee get it right, choosing Oklahoma over Georgia and Ohio State?
Yeah, absolutely. They had to. You can't have two Power Five conference champions, that being Oklahoma and Ohio State, both of them with one loss and not getting it. Ohio State's fate was sealed when they lost to Purdue. When you lose to an average team, Dusty's over there saluting, they ain't got no good ball club. They 6-6. So that right there doomed Ohio State. We're still going to the Rose Bowl and Purdue who's going to the toilet bowl, but you can't lose a bowl game like that and expect to be in the Final Four. Now, how you like that?
Listen, this was as clear-cut as it could get. We had only, in the history of the college football playoff, had three undefeated teams. Until this year alone, we had three undefeated teams. Those teams were locked, and Oklahoma had the best case. One loss, their one loss was to a good Texas team on neutral site, and they avenged that loss. Any four-team configuration other than this one would have been getting it wrong.
Yeah, now, I don't know how Oklahoma keeps Alabama under 50 points. I don't know how that happens.
All right, on to the NFL now. Deshaun Watson led the Texans to win over Baker Mayfield and the Browns. For Houston, their ninth straight win, and the Texans haven't lost in 71 days. Nick, is it time to consider Texans legit contenders in the AFC?
I can't do that. I am very impressed by what they've done, and I think it's a testament to the players they've got. Deshaun Watson, after a rough beginning to the year, has looked like he looked during his stretch of play last year pre-injury. The defense is what they envisioned back when I used to live in Houston. They drafted Jadeveon Clowney to play alongside J.J. Watt. They're now getting a full season of those two guys at full strength, but I can't quite consider them legitimate contenders.
I haven't seen an NFL season where a team won 9 games in a row. I didn't consider them a chance to be able to make it. When you look at, there is no dominant team in the AFC, you have to consider what they can do. Romeo Cannell back this year as their defensive coordinator, taking over for Vrabel, who went off to Tennessee. Tremendous job against the rookie quarterback. Yes. Houston, man, they got a chance. Yes, when you got J.J. Watt in them, you got a chance.
The Ravens improved to 3-0 with Lamar Jackson as their starting quarterback. He finished with just 125 yards in the air, but he added 75 yards and a touchdown on the ground, and the defense held the Falcons to 131 total yards,
wow,
their fewest yards in almost two decades. CeCe, how dangerous is this Ravens team with Lamar as the starter?
Oh, not dangerous at all. If you look at some of the defense he played against this week, gift, Atlanta. We know how hurt they are defensively, and he was able to do enough to be able to win. Didn't he play against Cincinnati, too?
And Oakland.
Oh, okay. Aren't those three of the top five worst defenses in
three
football?
Of the bottom five.
Yeah, absolutely. And until he learns how to be able to throw the ball effectively from the pocket, it's going to be a struggle. Now, they might win their division because Pittsburgh leaking oil coming home, but no, not yet.
Well, here's what I've been so impressed with. It's not just Lamar, but since he became the starter, here's what they've done on the ground. 53 for 267. Followed by 43 for 242, followed by yesterday 49 for 207. Three straight games with 200-plus yards rushing on at least 43 carries in every game. They are trying to play a different style of football than everyone else in the NFL, and these 3 weeks it's worked out well.
Yeah, but I got to be consistent. There was a guy named Tebow played just like that, and I used to rip him every game, winning or losing. So let's get back into the ripping season.
On to Pat Mahomes, who continues to torch NFL defenses, threw for four touchdown passes Sunday to join Peyton Manning and Tom Brady as the only quarterbacks to reach the 40-touchdown mark through 12 games. Chiefs beat the Raiders 40-33. Nick, does Mahomes have the edge over Drew Brees when we're talking MVP for this year?
Right now, he should have a slight edge over Drew Brees. And much like I didn't like the fact that it seemed to me the Heisman was decided with 5 weeks left in the season, I didn't like that after Mahomes lost to the Rams on Monday Night Football and then Drew Brees came out and they had a great game the following week. It was like, okay, the MVP's decided as well. Good night. Like, Drew Brees a minus 500 favorite in Vegas. Like, you can look at their numbers side by side and you can see, oh, okay, so Brees has him in passer rating and has thrown fewer picks. Mahomes has him in touchdowns, yards per pass, and pass yards per game, a significant number, about 50 more per game. Brees is not on there. Brees, obviously, 75% completions. Mahomes, about 67% completions. Like, and that's not even to mention what Mahomes is doing with his legs. Both teams are 10-2. Both teams have the two quarterbacks playing at the highest level this year. I think it, with 4 weeks left in the season, with a quarter of the season left, I think it's Mahomes by a hair. Vegas says Brees is running away with it. I don't see a case to be made that either guy is running away with it. Mahomes, obviously, this week, another 250 yards, four touchdown games.
Compared
while
to what Brees
had
this week,
his
yeah.
worst game of the season.
Yeah, to me, both guys are having sensational seasons. I'm not going to get into who's leading, who's ahead, what Vegas is saying, because it really don't matter. They got four games left, and whoever plays the best is going to be the MVP. All right? No one has this wrapped up. It's not like the Heisman Trophy and how their teams play coming down. So the question is, how does Patty Mahomes adjust to not having Kareem Hunt for the rest of the season? So in yesterday's game, you could see Kelce more involved. Spencer Ware is going to play a big role. He doesn't have necessarily the breakaway speed that Kareem does. So how is he going to adjust? We'll determine who's going to be the MVP, because I can look for Drew Brees to make adjustments. And also I could see Drew Brees potentially getting another weapon in Brandon Marshall for the last few games of the season. So let's watch and see how these teams evolve. There's still a lot of football to be played. Right now, these two have set themselves apart. Besides Aaron Donald on the defensive side with 16 and a half sacks, they have set themselves apart that the conversation should be steered around them.
And this goes through the Super Bowl?
No, it's a regular season.
This is just going to start regular season. All right, so we got a couple more weeks to see what both of these guys will do.
Yes.
All right, Tom Brady and the Patriots taking on the Vikings in
Foxborough. If they do play well, though, it will lead to a Super Bowl.
There you go.
You're right about that again.
Pick this up in the third. All I am is right. Brady, Josh Gordon, nice throw, nice catch. Pats up 17-10. Woo! Fourth quarter. Vikings pick up the fourth down. Hey, Bill Belichick challenges the spot.
It looked like that Ohio State.
Adam Thielen felt like maybe one of the Patriots faked an injury to give Belichick time to review it. The two had some words. They weren't the nicest words.
And your mama.
Then they played football again. Patriots up 24-10. Here comes Kirk Cousins trying to lead the comeback. That's never going to help when you throw to a guy not wearing your jersey. Pick, end zone, Pats win. They're now 9-3. On the year. Kirk Cousins takes the L. CC, are the Patriots now rounding into form at the exact right time?
Yeah, if people watch the show and everything, please just don't get tired of Jenna and I. Because Jenna and I, like, we've been living long enough to see this happen enough to kind of know how the movie's going to end. People keep thinking there's some type of different script in the NFL. Oh, man, they're playing Big 12 football. They're scoring 50, 45. Oh, welcome to the new NFL. Ah, when the leaves disappear from the trees, start getting a little bit of snow stuff on the ground. Hey, man, New England Patriots are going to be there. I don't care what the NFL rules are. No one teaches the rule and abide by the rules better than New England.
All and right? exploits little. Like, hey, like the thing Thielen was mad about, I am certain they coach that in New England. If there's a questionable...
Well, can I say something?
Yeah.
I played for Buddy Ryan. 1987. We was doing that in 87.
Doing listen, what? Let's tell the audience exactly what.
Yeah, we would fake an injury. If a team had an unfair advantage, they were trying to sub or do something. All of a sudden, my hamstring, a lower leg where you can't get off the field. And you drum it up, you yell and everything. You're like, okay, they're going to stop the game so you can get your unit situated the right
way. And we do see teams do that. What I'm talking about is where you think, where the coaching staff lets the players know or signals to them, we need extra time to see this. Because we need to know if we want to
challenge
it. And
then going into it, they're like, Chung, you're the one that's going to hurt your leg
really
this time.
What I was trying to say is the players are aware of the game, too.
Yep.
We as players know the rules of the game. We know replay. We just embellish and say, oh, Belichick. Oh, the players. Chung, no one yelled out there, hey, Chung, fall down. He knew what was going on. He thought it was going to be a bad spot. So the players on New England, they reacted the right way. That's what led to the exchange there.
And so your point that there's Pats are the standard and the Pats are the most consistent thing in sports. That's all true. What's also true is there were reasons to believe this year that this was the year the Pats didn't get a bye, that this was the year the Pats had to go on the road in the second round of the playoffs.
There was a little bit of information, but I got years and years and years and years of saying me, if one team's going to get it together, it's
gonna
them.
Be this team.
So a little bit of information this year. Yeah, every year we're going to it now. You know what? It's baked in. When is Brady going to fall apart? That's what we look at now. No. Let's wait 1 second. That's what we look at. We got that baked in. I'm watching. I want to be able to see that. When does this thing crumble? We haven't been able to see. Now, they struggled on the road like we hadn't seen. But this NFL competition, AFC, hadn't gotten any tougher. Jacksonville, who we thought was going to be riding with them to the end, man, they're gone bye-bye for the season already. So that's the reason why we thought the standard that's based in Gillette and in New England would work out in 2018 again.
But this is also why this game was such an impressive win, because one of the reasons people had legitimate reason to be concerned about New England, forget the rest of the AFC, was they got mollywopped by the Titans. And that was their third loss, double digits on the road. They didn't have a bye week, come out against a bad Jets team. And that game's 13-13 late into the third quarter. That was 8 days ago. Like, and then they get back home. It's December. And at home in December, they don't lose. And they beat what I consider to be a good Vikings team. And they dominated that football game. The Vikings had one great drive the whole game near the end of the first half. Aside from that, the Patriots absolutely dominated them defensively and did enough offensively. But I don't think it's disrespectful to the standard New England's build. I don't think it's disrespectful to the history they've had to say there have been moments this season where you're like, man, if they don't get a bye, can you believe that this team's going to win on the road multiple playoff games, something they've never done in this great history they've had because they haven't had to. But now it looks like, once again, they're not going to have to because things are falling perfectly for them.
Quickly, before we break, I do want to ask you about Kirk Cousins. Were you surprised with his play yesterday and the fact that they were only able to put up 10 points?
No, I wasn't surprised. They're one-dimensional. They got two wide receivers on the outside. They don't utilize their tight end. They got no running game. What I'm surprised is John DeFilippo, which everyone's saying is the next bright young mind, that he didn't come up with something going against Bill Belichick that was more creative. So they're easy to defend now, especially going against a Belichick defense. That's what they made them look like. Very, very simple last night.
You got to have a counterpunch prepared against the New England Patriots.
You have to have more variance in your offense. You have to be able to stretch them from sideline to sideline. Didn't throw deep down the middle. If you do that, they put you in their scopes, squeeze you out like an anaconda, choke you out like we saw in the second half.
And I don't want none unless you've got buns, hon. Anaconda. Isn't that the song?
We're going to end on that. That was cool.
No, that's way better than anything he would have ever said. You got buns, hon. Go ahead.
Wow. I wasn't
she got
sure
the
when
line
I,
right.
When you, I said it, I was so like, scared. I wasn't sure if it was appropriate.
You, okay.
Coming up.
You
big
got
news
buns,
out
hon,
Jenna.
They see you. They see you on the gram. She flexing them. You see it.
We're back.
She getting ready right after the show.
Two of the best in the Big Ten hit the hardwood tonight on FS1 as 14th ranked Iowa takes on number 9 Michigan State. Big Ten College Hoops tips off at 6 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports
Let's go,
set.
Coach Izzo. Let's do this tonight. I know you've been counseling Draymond. I need you to concentrate on your team.
All right, we're back here with Chris Canty after what most likely will be the second straight season missing the playoffs and after a season of friction with Aaron Rodgers, the Packers fired head coach Mike McCarthy. Happened after last night's brutal loss at home to the 3-win Arizona Cardinals. Offensive coordinator Joe Philbin named interim head coach for a 4-7-1 Green Bay Packer team. Mike McCarthy's been with the Packers since 2006, winning a Super Bowl back in 2010. Kenny, I'll start with you. What was your reaction when you first heard this midseason firing?
Well, I felt like it was coming, whether they did it at the end of the regular season or on the Monday after the regular season concludes, it was going to happen. There was going to be a divorce between the marriage of Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. And I feel like it's because of the friction of that relationship. I think you've seen that it's affected the team and collectively what they're trying to do. This is the first season that Aaron Rodgers would have started the majority of the games in a regular season and the team not qualified for the postseason. The second consecutive year that the Packers will be on the outside looking in. And this is an organization that has enjoyed stability at the quarterback position like no other. I mean, you look at the last quarter century between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's quarterbacking at the highest level. So this organization clearly values the ability of the head coach being able to go above the X's and O's and take advantage of having one of the most talented quarterbacks the game has ever seen. Mike McCarthy hasn't done that. Now, it's not all on him. I think this is in part Mike McCarthy paying for the sins of Ted Thompson because he did not draft well enough to justify his philosophy as it pertains to pro free agency and not being active at the beginning of pro free agency. I mean, you go back to the 2015 draft class, not a whole lot of hits. Not sure how many guys are still left from that draft class on this team. But again, when you look at it, I don't think they have enough talent to be able to compete with the better teams in the NFC.
Listen, Aaron Rodgers is not having his best year. In fact, he's probably having one of his two worst years he's had as far as healthy starter post-rookie season. Because his rookie season's the only time he's been healthy that they didn't make the playoffs like you were talking about. And so part of this falls on Aaron's doorstep. Part of it falls on Ted Thompson's doorstep. But if the real reason that Mike McCarthy is fired now is because he and Aaron Rodgers, used the divorce analogy, had irreconcilable differences, it's Mike McCarthy's job to make sure that doesn't happen. Like, even if you have a temperamental superstar, it is your job as the head coach to make sure you and your quarterback, if you're an offensive-minded head coach, are on the same page. And if you see that you two are straying from that page, if you don't get it righted, this is what's going to happen.
That should have happened when Alex Van Pelt left and when Jordy Nelson wasn't there. I mean, when the writing was on the wall with the friction in this relationship.
Right, and it never got solved. And now you lose at home to the Cardinals, and you are gone. You, after the bye, you've lost 5 of 6. There's now not even the hope of, oh, we run the table. No, the first chance to run the table, you lose to the Cardinals and Josh Rosen in Lambeau in a snowy environment. And so, like, I don't believe that Aaron Rodgers wanted Mike McCarthy back, but I also don't think Aaron Rodgers got Mike McCarthy fired. I think Mike McCarthy got himself fired by underachieving the better part of this decade with the league's most talented player.
Well, I'm just going to tell you about Aaron Rodgers since he's left high school. Since he's left high school, he has not had a whole bunch of significant relationships, that either being on the field or off the field. If you talk to a lot of players who have come from Green Bay, who's real, real close with Aaron Rodgers? Not a lot of people. We've seen. And I typically don't go to this, but I believe it tells a picture as far as who a person really, really is. We've had the information as far as his family. He's not close to his brothers, not close to his parents. So who is he having relationships with that are successful? So you blame it on Mike McCarthy. Okay, Mike McCarthy, I've seen him be in some healthy relationships. I've seen him coach. I've seen him run offenses. Aaron Rodgers is part of the problem, too. And I believe that Aaron Rodgers, because this was his desire not to have McCarthy there, because Aaron Rodgers could have helped this situation out. He didn't. Aaron Rodgers is a problem, too, demanding to be the highest paid player. So now they're going to be strapped. like other franchises we've seen, strapped for cash, and how do I dispense this money and put a championship team there? So I believe that Aaron right now is getting ready to go through the most critical part of his career, where he is getting ready to be under more scrutiny. Yeah. And how do you handle a superstar? We saw this in New York last year. And Eli is not nearly in the same class. We see this with Peyton Manning. How do you move from a star? How much impact do I allow this star to have on the organization? It becomes a problem for the organization. It was a problem for Eli Manning. It was a problem for Peyton Manning. It might be a problem for Drew Brees there in New Orleans. They signed him to a 2-year contract. It's hard when you have a superstar, and the more clout you give him, the more problems you're going to have. So I hope that they don't fall to this model that we think, oh, let's go with a young, bright coordinator. Mm-mm. Aaron Rodgers is not ready for that. You better get some type of veteran who has coached in this league and coached older quarterbacks. Someone like Ken Whisenhunt, someone like Jim Caldwell.
Bruce Arians.
These would be the guys that I would look to. Josh McDaniel, that ship has already sailed. He's already cut a deal with the Crafts to say he's taking over for New England. So don't include him in that search. So
when you say Aaron Rodgers not ready for that with a young, bright mind, what do you mean? Like, what, or do you mean that person's not ready for Aaron?
If you look at Ben Roethlisberger, yeah, they changed the coordinator, but did they change the system? No. So you're a prisoner. When Anthony Lynn took over the Chargers, what happened? He changed the defense. What did he do with the offense? Kept it exactly the same. If you're going to transition with these great quarterbacks, if you want them to be successful, you can't disregard all that information, all the years of playing in the same. And as Coach Mangini says all the time, the continuity. It really helps the program. So the continuity of that offense and Aaron Rodgers, I would not put a young coach with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
I completely agree with you. I mean, a young coach is going to have a hard sell with Aaron Rodgers just based on the resume. I mean, what coach is going to be able to come in there with the kind of credentials that's going to garner the respect of the best quarterback arguably the game has ever seen? So, I mean, that's what makes it a tough sell. That's why you do probably need somebody that's a veteran, that's probably already been a head coach, that has that experience, that can work with them, or somebody that's focused on the defensive side of the ball and just allow Aaron Rodgers and Joe Philbin or whatever offensive coordinator that you bring in to let them do their thing on that side of the ball. But that's going to be the challenge. I think the Packers' job is going to be an attractive job because they do have 2 first-round draft picks. They do have between $40 and $50 million of cap space to play with this offseason. They did pick up the additional mid-round draft pick from the Ha-Ha Clinton Dix trade. Mm-hmm. So they have some assets. And then, of course, when you
they
couple that with the best quarterback in the league, I mean, it is going to be an attractive job. So I do believe when Mike Murphy says that we did this to try to get a jump on the head coaching search, their intent is to find the most qualified candidate that can put Aaron Rodgers in a situation where he can compete for a championship.
I think it also puts all those younger players on notice that we're making wholesale changes. So how they play in those four games is far more important now. If McCarthy had been there, they would have been sleepwalking. They'd have been packing bags. They'd have been getting their stuff ready for the offseason. Now when the head coach is gone, everyone in the locker room organization knows, man, if they've gotten rid of him, they can get rid of me. So the attention to detail to the finish, it will be important for the Pack.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.